Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Red Sox fans, here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this midweek edition of the podcast. We are downloaded in over 30 countries across the globe and available on every major media platform. For everyone listening on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show if you have not already. Nothing you do will help us more immensely. The Red Sox just wrapped up a 3-game set against the Houston Astros, dropping the series 3-1. They are currently still in second place, 2 games behind the Tampa Bay Rays. Just a quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We will call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, hit the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can also find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Co-hosting with me tonight from the mile high city of Denver by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan. Andrew, how are you?
Doing well. Bruins just wrapped it up. That was nice. Got us start our podcast a little bit earlier than last week.
Yeah, that was a nightmare start last week, right around midnight, I think.
It was brutal.
Yes, absolutely. And so the Bruins are up 2-1 now. All right. And also joining us tonight from the nation's capital by way of Newport, Rhode Island, Job Goddard. How are you, Job?
I'm doing better now that Brad Marchand buried that in the back of the net. So I'm also a Bruins fan. It's good to be up in that series. And sign me up for more 2 o'clock games on the end of the series in the middle of the week. Because starting at 10:30 and starting at midnight is a whole different night. So.
Well, I wouldn't see a single game if that happened. So selfishly, I got to root for the primetime. The Yankees series coming up are all primetime games, including Sunday. So the Sunday crew will have to suffer a late start because theirs is always a fixed 10 p.m. start when there's no ESPN game. But getting kind of into the Astros series, kind of hoping for something better. You know, we could have and maybe did see what our identity was as a possible playoff team and hoping for at least a split. All three of us on the last show thought the Red Sox could win it 3-1. Ended up being the opposite. Any thoughts on the series before we get into studs and duds?
I mean, you got to tip your hat to the Astros pitchers on this one. There were three guys that the Sox had never seen before, and they performed like these were three guys they had never seen before. The Astros, we all know how good their spin rate is. Their best chance was last night, other than obviously today, but Valdez, as I missed during the game, I didn't pick up on it, but saw today on Lou Maloney's Twitter, changed his glove in the second inning to a darker glove, and then his stuff got a little nastier, and that probably aided his recovery after that 35 pitch first or whatever it was.
Had some sauce in it.
It had to have. I mean, all of a sudden, every single pitch was on Rob Finn's Twitter 3 minutes later because they were just dipping and darting out of the way. So there was something going on. Such as 2021 baseball, but yeah.
Oh, I think everyone's using something. But Valdez was definitely far more effective after that first inning. I think it was a lot of frustration for me after the series. I thought we were going to split the series. I didn't think we would win a series, the four-game set. But I would have liked to see us take more pitches last night after, making them throw 35 in the first. I was like, oh, good, we'll get them out of there in the fourth inning. And we'll go deep into this bullpen, hopefully see some of these guys twice in the series. And we weren't able to do that. So a little bit of frustration on the part of, on the fans' part, because this team is striking out more, not walking enough, not seeing enough pitches, and there's no adjustments from Cora. So a little bit of frustration from me.
Yeah, before we do get into studs and duds, I have it right here. We walked a total of four times in the first three games. So not
And we're 29th in the American League in walks. 29th in the league in walks.
Outstanding.
That's, bottom three, and it's unacceptable.
Yeah, just today we were better. Let's see, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 walks in today's game. Seven. So it helped that Odorizzi was in there and gave up three in the three innings he pitched. But let's
his pitches also aren't darting everywhere out of the zone. They're not breaking at like 60 feet 4 inches and just completely dropping out of the zone because everything else that those other three starters were looking like strikes. You got to swing at them. And then they end up, just in the dirt, but they had no chance. It sucked.
Yeah, and Odorizzi isn't a spin rate guy. He was brought in because they thought they were losing Valdez for the season. I mean, the initial reports were that Valdez would have Tommy John. And then it wasn't – I not kidding. Last show, I didn't even know he was back until I saw the – probable pitchers for the series, and he had, I think, made one previous start or whatever. But yeah, so Odorizzi isn't really part of that program and doesn't really have the pitching repertoire to, at least for now, to replicate what Valdez and Garcia do. So, all right, let's get into it. Studs and duds. Andrew, you're leading off. Who is your stud for the series?
Mine was Nick Pivetta. I think we saw his best game as a Red Sox last night, and it sure as hell wasn't looking like it was going to be, early on. But then he battled back, went six strong innings, only let up two runs against, a damn good lineup. I think we can all agree that's one of the top five lineups in the league. And, two runs, nine Ks, and showed mental toughness throughout. And he had some swagger going on. I love it. We're at the point where it's, you expect this now. Maybe one or two games into the year, you're like, all right, well, keep building on it, keep building on it. Let's see. But now it's every 5 days. And I can't believe that everything's come full circle now with, having Workman back and Nick Pivetta and whatever we're going to have with Seabold if he gets healthy. This is, quite frankly, a revelation. If he's your number four, if you get a healthy Chris Sale, E-Rod gets right, and who knows, Richards, that's a good playoff rotation right there.
Joe, go ahead.
I think I heard it best, actually, today in the post-game show. The Red Sox rotation is seventh in the big leagues in performance this season so far. Pivetta's been a huge part of that. We didn't expect this from him. Far from it. I think we pretty much expected him to go five, give up 2 to 3 runs, and be a little bit better than what we thought Martin Perez was last season. And instead, you know, he's taking the ball, and even after giving up a lot of pitches in that first inning, I think he threw 32 pitches, he only gave up one run, and then he still went 6 innings. So I love that from him. I probably wouldn't have made him my stud if it was up to me, because we lost that game by a close margin. You'd like him to shut it down just a little bit more with the walks, especially in the early innings. But I'll take it every fifth day if you can give me that. That's going to be a huge boost to this rotation going down the stretch. And going down the stretch, I'm not convinced that Chris Sale is going to be in the rotation. I've mentioned that a couple of times on the show. So for me, big performance from Pivetta, but now we need it every fifth day.
I'm a little more optimistic about Sale. Apparently, he was throwing sliders for the first time in his last bullpen session. So seems to be at least checking the boxes so far. But you could be right. They're not gonna take any chances if they don't think he's ready. But
well, I look at it, Terry, and I see what they're doing with Garrett Whitlock, right? Where he's a year out of Tommy John, and they're using him very sparingly on a lot of rest. And not pushing him. Now, I understand Chris Sale's a different animal, but if that's the approach they're taking with guys coming off Tommy John, and you look at guys across the league that have been getting hurt because they're coming back too early or have just elbow issues in general, I just don't see them rushing him back to a starting role. So I don't know necessarily that we'll see him in a starting rotation until the playoffs. So for that, we need Nick Pivetta to eat some innings, in my opinion.
Well, I think, though, with Whitlock, if he was coming back late July, early August, he might start because there's not going to be enough innings to worry about it. And I think that'll be the case with Sale. But like I said, you know, every day, every time we turn around, someone's going on the DL. Strasburg's on it now. Someone else just had a problem with their side. Oh, it was the Flaherty. Yeah, Jack Flaherty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so one after another, they're all going on the DL, so IL. I'm never gonna get that right. But yeah, so anyway, getting back to Pivetta, though, I put that loss on the offense. I mean, it was a pathetic showing, and I know we're up against tough pitching, but some of the at-bats were terrible. We'll get into some of the hitting in a little bit, actually. But Pivetta, obviously, he faced 7 batters in the first inning. Wasn't pretty. And he hit Yordan Alvarez with a pitch, and that's what loaded the bases. And then there was a sac fly that brought in the run. And luckily, another ball was hit to Verdugo, and it wasn't deep enough to bring the runner home. And then he finally got out of the inning. But after that first inning, he only gave up one hit, a double in the fourth inning by Kyle Tucker, who had a very good series, by the way. So, I mean, this is it. You know, this is it. Like, I can't hold anything against Pivetta at this point. I mean, this is one of the better offenses he'll face. I think the Astros offense is better than the Yankees offense now that they're healthy, regardless of what the stats currently show. I'm going to be more afraid of the Astros than the Yankees going forward. And I was impressed. So not much you can hold against him. And he's getting 8-9 strikeouts every time out too. So,
well, I mean, his off speed stuff is just dominant.
Yeah.
Just absolutely dominant.
Yeah, I mean, he's the ace of the staff, I would say. I think we'll get into another guy who can kind of make a case in the last 5 or 6 guys out. But, yeah. So, I guess with that, go ahead. Make that case, Joe.
So, my stud for the series is Martin Perez. Everybody who listens to the show on a regular basis knows he's my favorite Sox player and has been for a while. Went 7 2/3 today, gave up 6 hits, 1 walk. It was right before he got pulled in the 8th inning. And it was to Diaz, who was the only guy tonight that he really, or today rather, that he really had trouble with, who gave up a single and a double to Diaz. So I don't mind him being careful in that spot. He's dropped his ERA to 3.09. It's now leading the Sox. And we know what we expect from him every week. It's usually six innings, and it's usually two strikeouts. This is the first time a Red Sox pitcher has gone into the eighth inning since 2019. Eduardo Rodriguez did it once, August 17th, 2019. So in a stretch where we desperately need the bullpen to get some rest, he went out there and he absolutely dominated a lineup that I believe they only had one starter sitting. And like you said, Terry, it's one of the better offenses you'll face in the American League. So Martin Perez is my stud for the series.
Andrew, thoughts on Perez?
I mean, hard to ask for anything else out of him. I mean, you brought him back as your five. You declined his option, told him to take a pay cut, brought him back, and now he's doing this. It's great. And my favorite thing about him is he's efficient, well, when he's on, and he's fast. He's a fast worker. It's not, you know, like a dice case situation where it's 30 seconds in between every pitch. And he's just bringing it right now. Obviously, his sinker has been his best pitch, and it's working. And, you know, those can be a little on and off. But I'm so happy that he decided to come back, didn't shop himself. And I don't know what more to say about him. This is just great production for the cost. I don't think there's a better bargain right now out there in the league as a starting pitcher.
Well, so just to add on to Andrew's point there, Terry, before you jump in, he's given up one walk in his last three appearances besides tonight's walk. So actually two walks, rather, in his last three appearances. When he doesn't walk people, he's one of the more dominant starting pitchers in the American League when you just look at the numbers. And he is Mr. Reliable. He's going to take the ball every fifth day. So to me, I just don't see how you can't make a case that he's the ace of the staff right now as far as reliability. Maybe not in terms of ceiling, because we know that his ceiling is probably not as high as, say, a Nick Pivetta or even an Eduardo Rodriguez when he's on. But right now, I would trust Martin Perez in a big game over anybody else on the staff, because you know what you're getting every single time.
He's only given up more than three runs once, and it was four runs, and it was his third start of the season against the White Sox. He's given up three runs or less every time out. And today, I think he was kind of aided by the aggression of the Astros offense. They were pouncing on him early, and he was getting a lot of contact outs. I don't think he even recorded a strikeout until the fourth or fifth inning.
He only struck out four at the end of the day. One quick note on strikeouts, though. He leads the American League in called strikeouts,
which is insane to me. He's got a 8.5 strikeout per nine, but he's leading in that category.
And his fastball is a 93 mile an hour cutter. It's not 99. It's not, you know, you'd think it would be somebody like a Chapman or a Matt Barnes or a starting pitcher like Giolito or Glasnow or Garrett Cole even. You know, you don't think of Martin Perez. He's way down the list. But that inside fastball that he has followed by the outside changeup is just a dominant 1-2 combo. I trust him over any pitcher on the staff.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of a strike it was, but that one against Altuve late in the game was filthy when Altuve, like, collapsed at the plate and was just in disbelief. Again, who knows what that zone that started having later in the game, but it was filthy. And if he keeps throwing that, who's giving up their spot in the rotation? You know, it would have been like, oh, it's Perez. Now it's like, oh, shit. we really don't know. Yeah, exactly.
I think it's going to be Erod at this rate, but was that with the Altuve strikeout? Was that the curveball that he very seldom throws?
Yeah, it was that inside curve.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see if they
the best pitch of the night from him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they tinker with that going forward. But I wasn't knocking Perez by, you know, the Astros' aggression today. I mean, he was in a rhythm that was working for him, and the Astros couldn't solve it. One other point, the Red Sox didn't sign him till late. Anybody could have had him before mid-January. and possibly maybe a little later than that. So all these teams must be kicking themselves for not paying $5.5 million.
They knew he wanted to be back. I mean, they had that little bit of leverage over him. He wanted to play with Cora. He said it. And that was one of the main reasons he signed last year, you know, before the suspension was handed down, and they held it over him and they played their cards absolutely perfectly. And I'm glad he's going out, because, you know, if we have a normal market next year, since all these stadiums are full, he's looking at, you know, over $10 million a year at this point.
He's got an option, I think.
Does he?
I'm pretty sure.
I'm going to be honest. I have no idea what his contract looks like. What I do know is that in his last 7 starts, he's got a 1.98 ERA. Through 41 innings pitch, he's given up 34 hits. That includes today 9 earned runs in 7 starts. And in today's game, you know, 2 of those hits were broken bat flares late in the game. For all intents and purposes, he really doesn't give up hard contact to guys at this point. And it's important that the Red Sox have that, because everybody else is health-related history. They all have a bad health history, or they're spotty, and we need them to go 15 starts in order to even make it worth it. Martin Perez is going to pitch 30 starts this season, and thank God for that.
Terry, you were right. This poor son of a bitch has a $6 million club option. That sucks for him. Now I feel bad. They've got this on 3 different guys now. They have this low team option. They have Garrett Richards at, I think, a shade under 10.
9.8, something like that.
Yep. And then they have Hunter Renfroe with 3 more years of arbitration.
Yeah, so
those are trade chips if they want it.
With Perez, though, you would think it would put a lot of pressure on Erod to get it together, because you can just bring back Perez for cheap money and kind of know what you're getting. And if Houck's up, we're hoping Seabold won't have any issues. We got Winkowski down in, Sale will be back. So
Whitlock, if they want it.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of the reasons. I mean, I guess I haven't spoke about Perez's option, but I've been aware of it the whole time. And it's part of the case that I've made since the start of the season, that they're not going to bring back Eduardo Rodriguez. I'm so convinced of that, but we'll see. But that'll be a fun debate as the season plays out, you know, depending on how those guys pitch. But
we're going to have a whole episode, on Eduardo Rodriguez as we get closer to the deadline, because
we will.
The way that he's pitching now, I don't know. They might bring him back on a prove it deal. He might take a 1-year deal at this point.
Well, that's true. Again. That's true. That could happen. That scenario could happen, but I think a 4 or 5 year deal is a little more far fetched based on what we have in the pipeline, especially with Whitlock, who I always forget about. My stud for the series had a hit in every game he played. He did not play game 2, and actually only a pinch hit in game 1. But that's Christian Arroyo, 4 for 9 on the series. Kind of took the pressure off of Perez today pretty early in the game by hitting that 3-run bomb off of Jake Odorizzi. And it's nice to see that's his first home run of the season. And when you're looking at other guys scuffling, Marwin Gonzalez, Danny Santana, arguably not off to a great start. I think his average is well under 2 at this point. You need one of those 3 guys is going to have to emerge if they don't want to get traded, DFA'd, whatever. So it's nice to see Arroyo step up. He was my breakout guy. Admittedly, I'm a little frustrated by the injuries so far. And hopefully he can stay on the field, but he's not going to make his case to be the everyday second baseman for the Boston Red Sox unless he does stay on the field. And we all love the intensity. We love the effort. He's very good defensively, you know, in the middle infield. So I and who knows how the game would have played out had that 3-run homer not happened. So
God, it was a good, I thought it went further off the bat when he hit that, but what a dumb stadium. I would be so frustrated as a pitcher if I could let that up. That was essentially what happened the other night that put the nail in the coffin with Altuve. Both of those had a less than, like, I think half a percentage of a batting point of being a hit. And they both, you know, were home runs that changed the game. But I'm happy. He's had a string of bad luck. You don't get hit in the hand in the same place on back-to-back nights without just being absolutely snake bitten. So I'm happy to see Arroyo just kind of emerge. Injuries have been what's been holding him back. So if he can take the second base job and take it, you know, 5 out of the 7 games, we do know like that Cora likes to work his guys around, keep them fresh. But I really do hope that Arroyo ends up forcing his hand to become the semi-regular starter there, because I think that bat can play. He, you know, you don't become a top prospect in this game without having the pedigree.
Joke.
Well, Terry, how long have you been waiting to say Arroyo's my stud? It's got to be what now? Like almost a year. But anyway, I love what he did in this series. Every single at-bat, even those where, you know, he made a loud out, were good at-bats. He put the ball in play a lot. He sees a lot of pitches well out of the pitcher's hand. You can tell because he's taken a lot of close balls in this series. And then he gets aggressive when he sees his pitch. It's a lot of what we saw from Michael Chavis in the first 6 weeks of his big league career. Now, there might be a hole in his swing that they turn around and exploit at some point. If he does play 5 out of every 7 games, pitchers might get a better book on him. But for right now, he's hitting .280. He plays great defense at second base. He's got soft hands. He doesn't make a lot of errors. And on top of that, he gives you so much hustle. I would love to see him in the lineup more often. I think he would be a good leadoff hitter for this team in a spot where Kike Hernandez has not been ideal at the moment, because he puts the ball in play a lot and he sees a lot of pitches. And as far as the home run today goes, I struggle to credit him with a home run because that's a home run in exactly one of 30 major league ballparks. Only the one that we played in today. And it might graze the monster at home, but either way, it changed the game. It would have scored runs anyway. And without that, I think Martin Perez probably walks a couple of hitters, feels a little bit more pressure, and you're looking at a whole different series if he gets swept. So I was very happy with Christian Arroyo in this series, and I want to see more of him.
And just to illustrate the injuries here, Arroyo's already had 81 at-bats this season after even missing some time. This is the second most he's ever had in a season. So his rookie year in San Francisco, he had 125. So, and his slash line isn't bad. You know, .284, .333 on base, and his slugging is down .383, but this is his first home run, so that'll come up if he can stay on the field. So hopefully it continues, because we got a lot of problems elsewhere in the lineup, as we'll get to. Some honorable mentions: Alex Verdugo, 4 for 14, drew a couple of walks on top of that, had an RBI in the first game, but that was a blowout, so kind of meaningless. But Hunter Renfro also had a hit in every game, was 5 for 13 on the series, drove in runs in 2 out of the 4 games. Garrett Richards had another adventurous 6-inning outing. I'm just going to call him a tightrope specialist, because he gets into some jams but gets out of them every time. In the third inning, he was one ball away from having the bases loaded, no outs, but then gets a double play off of Carlos Correa, and then a ground out in the next at-bat by Bregman. Got out of the jam. he wasn't so lucky the inning after. He walked two straight. He gave up a double, leadoff double to Alvarez, and then walked Gurriel. And Kyle Tucker was able to move the runners over. McCormick had a sack fly, so one more run came in. But I'm going to also put that on the offense regardless, because it was another putrid game in which only one run was scored. And a solid outing where Richards gave us a chance to win. It didn't happen. And some decent bullpen outings. Darwinson had a nice one-inning outing, clean inning basically. Didn't give up a hit or a walk, struck out one. So any thoughts on the honorable mentions?
Renfro continues to impress. His defense has been great. Had another kind of weird outfield assist, but it was an outfield assist nonetheless. he's over one war at this point of the season, which, you know, you didn't really expect to see. And he's proven invaluable. He's literally been the offense out of the 7-8-9 hole on the season. I think, you know, he's got to play every day. Before it was maybe he platoons, we figure out Duran. No, I don't see any situation, unless he's in the midst of a huge struggle, that you're taking this guy out of the lineup.
You know, there's absolutely no reason to take him out of the lineup at this point. Over his last month, his average is .296, his on-base is .321, his slugging is .546. Now, if you narrow that down to his last 15 games, .327, .375, .615, and his last seven games, he's hitting .522 with .560 OBP and .1043 slugging. We're not going to see that guy. But if we can see the .290 average that we're putting up, and we have that lineup gets one position deeper, and then you put Christian Arroyo in for a Marwin Gonzalez, then you're looking at a lineup that's seven, maybe eight spots deep in certain spots. And then it really doesn't hurt when, you know, Bobby Dalbec or insert bench bat that really can't hit, Santana, strikes out four times in a game. It doesn't hurt as much if everyone else in the lineup's putting up numbers. Hunter Renfro has been fantastic. He was almost my dud for this series, but I just think you got to play him every day. Andrew's right.
I just wish Hunter Renfro wasn't carrying the team because, you know, he's been the best hitter the last couple of weeks at least. So there's no other viable option. And like Job, I don't think this is sustainable, but we'll
no,
take what we can
get. No, screenshot it now. Absolutely screenshot it now. He's hitting .261. That's as high as it's probably going to get this year. I mean, I would have been happy with .235, .240, but Jesus, .261 at this point? That's more than anyone could ask for.
Well, I mean, my favorite part about this whole stretch, and I'm looking at his last 30 games, so admittedly not the whole season, not even his hottest stretch, but he struck out 26 times in his last 108 at-bats, 14 strikeouts in his last 52 at-bats. He's just not striking out at a rate we're seeing from everybody else in the lineup, and Cora has stressed it. Cora pretty much has said it multiple times. If you put the bat on the ball, you're going to be in the lineup. So I expect to see him every day going forward, unless there's a really bad matchup or Cora wants to rest somebody.
And there's really no viable options regardless. So he will be playing every day. Getting over to the duds side of the spectrum, Andrew, who's your dud?
Unfortunately, it's Rafael Devers, who has lost the ability to hit a fastball, and it's the most damning thing I've ever seen in my life. Today, on his double, that was the 50th straight fastball he saw, and that was his first hit off of it. He has been very bad. And there's no reason to throw him anything off speed. I think Oda Rizzi might have thrown him a changeup at one point this game, because Eck was like, oh, there's a changeup. I was like, why the hell would you throw this guy a changeup right now? Luckily, you know, this hasn't sank his season statistically, but it's alarming, to say the least. Hires came out today. He was asked about it, said, you know, he's trying to do too much. He is trying to launch these balls 650 feet. We all can see it. He's swinging from his heels, but give me double Devers back. That's all we need. Just line it into left center on balls away. Pull him into the gap in right center or down the line in right when the ball's inside. I don't need 40 home runs out of him. I just don't. I'd be willing to give him the same, you know, very large contract if he hit 50 doubles, you know, as opposed to 50 home runs. I would be willing to pay him the same amount of money. I don't need him to try to be this showstopper, you know, batting practice-esque home run hitter. And I wish he would adjust a little bit, cut his swing down, because we can't have these guys all, you know, 3 through 5 struggling at the same time. It's not sustainable. You get series like we saw, you know, the past 4 days.
Joe. Andrew, would it surprise you to know what Rafael Devers' stats are over the last 7 games?
I would say he probably has 2 hits.
He's 8 for 25.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's more hits than I thought he did.
He's hitting 320.
The really?
The part is he has 10 strikeouts in his last 25 at-bats.
Hmm.
So that's the alarming part. But actually, he's hitting 320. He's taking 2 walks, 370 OBP. So the numbers don't bear out as much what the eye test says. But the eye test says you're absolutely right. He's swinging.
What was he this series, though? I feel like this series, they exploited all of his weaknesses.
So, yeah, the first 3 games of the series, I don't think
he was hitless, right? Oh, yeah.
First 2 games, he was hitless.
He had one last night?
He was.
Oh, he had a couple last night, right?
Unless I wrote it wrong. He was 2 for 4, I think, and then 1 for 3 today.
But in those first 2 games, you're absolutely right. The high fastball was eating him alive, and it was almost like his eyes are getting too big for the ball. You know, he sees the ball coming in, and he's like, oh, I'm going to hit this one 500. And then he's late catching up to it, and he either fouls it into the dirt or misses it completely. To me, it's got a little bit of scare. It's a little scary to me because, to me, it reminds me a little bit of what happened to Michael Chavis, where they pound him with the upstairs fastball, and he wants to hit it 500, and he puts too much pressure on himself, and he strikes out a lot. Obviously, Rafael Devers is a whole different tier of player, different tier of hitter than Michael Chavis, and he won't do that all season. But we need more from Rafael Devers, and it's apparent when other guys in the lineup aren't doing well. We just need him to put the ball in play a little bit more. You know, 10 for 25 in terms of strikeouts is not good. We don't want to deal with that. So you're absolutely right, Andrew. He needs to do a little bit better.
I think I said in the last show, when you're talking about him swinging for the fences all the time, swinging from his heels, like Andrew just said, that's what Benintendi did. He tried to increase his home runs to increase his value as a player for when free agency came up. And I've noticed that with Devers. He's been very erratic with his swings. And another stat, I mean, this is what makes the fastball thing so stunning. Devers is tied for second right now with Nolan Arenado for doubles in MLB, and he's only one behind Adam Frazier. If Devers hits 2 doubles tomorrow, he's the doubles leader. So it's just crazy to me that this didn't get exposed until this series, and I think that speaks to Houston's pitching program that they were aware of this somehow.
I agree with you, Terry. I think it speaks a lot to their data management. But I also think it speaks a lot to the confidence of the pitching staff. A lot of pitching staff probably know the weakness of Rafael Devers is the upstairs fastball. But a lot of pitching staffs probably also know if it's not exactly where you want to put it, then it is going 500. If it's an inch low, then he's going to put it in the upper deck. So I think a lot of teams, you know, they play to their strengths rather than his weakness, because they know if they make a mistake, then they're going to pay for it. And Houston didn't do that. They went out there and they did exactly what they needed to do to get him out. So I don't know if a lot of teams will do that, but I expect him to make some tweaks.
He had six strikeouts in seven at-bats in the first two games. So they, and then that's when the light bulb went off. Oh my God, he can't catch up to it. And then just today, his one strikeout today, he couldn't catch up to 294 mile an hour fastballs. Those were just, he was late on them and whiffed.
Well, you know, he wasn't the only guy either, though. You know, a lot of the hitters today were late on the fastball, and a lot of the hitters in this series were late on the fastball. And I wonder if maybe Houston's doing something with the ball and their spin rate that makes it that if you're not sitting on the slider or on the curveball, you're absolutely not going to hit it. We saw Xander Bogaerts sit on the curveball today to get his hit, break out of his slump. And he fouled off a couple of pitches that were 92, 93, and he was late on those. No. I wonder if maybe Red Sox hitters were just sitting off speed the entire first half of this series.
On that, I swear to God, I had the same thought because on the it was, I think, a 3-1 pitch to Dahlbeck today. He swung ugly on an inside pitch, and Eck was shitting on him, but it was like he was clearly expecting the ball to tail 6 inches over the plate and look like an idiot for taking a ball right down the middle. I mean, these guys have no – the they're defying physics, quite frankly, with what they're throwing out there. The RPMs on there are just absolutely absurd. I don't blame them for looking like idiots. So I do think – I think you're right there, Job. I think these guys were looking and almost guessing on every pitch.
Yeah, I mean, with Devers, though, the data suggests he's just sitting on everything against everyone. Like, he just hasn't been attacking fastballs all year, so that has to change. His first home run was off 102-103-mile-an-hour fastball off Aroldis Chapman. So he just needs to, I don't know, anticipate what's coming a little bit better, or pitch recognition, whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, so who's next, me or Job?
You're next.
I'm next.
Oh, no, actually, am I up next? I think I'm up next.
Okay.
We didn't talk about Xander Bogaerts enough.
Go ahead.
So Xander Bogaerts is my dud for this series. The numbers obviously bear that out. He was 0 for 24 going into that second-to-last at-bat where he hit the double and knocked in two. He talked about it. I'm not going to get all over him because he's never in his career had a streak where he's gone hitless for seven games. He was six at this point going into today. He went out, got a double. He was clearly sitting curveball in that at-bat where he got his base hit. He fouled off a couple of fastballs. He's clearly working on some stuff for his swing. He talked about it in the post-game press conference. He's just not been feeling good all series, and he's been guessing. So I'm not worried about him. I think he'll bounce back. It says a lot about how good your shortstop is when he goes 0 for 24 at this point in the season and his average is still 313. So I'm not going to stress out about it, but we absolutely need better from him. And if you get two or three more hits from Xander Bogaerts in this series, you probably win at least two of these four games instead of one.
Yeah, I was going back and forth between Devers and Xander for duds, you know, whole left side. And there's just no sugarcoating. He was really bad. He hadn't before today had a hit since May 25th, which is not going to be too helpful. Luckily they were able to pull some of those games off, but he's struggling. He's a good enough player and he's accountable to the point where you don't worry too much. He hopped on a post game presser yesterday, unprompted. He wasn't scheduled to speak, said he needed to be better. So you like to see it. Obviously, this isn't going to be a long-term thing. It's Xander. He's going to hit. The number's going to be there. He's going to play fine defense. It's just a bad stretch. Unfortunately, 3 through 5 all had their bad stretch at the same time. Just baseball sometimes.
This might not have anything to do with it, but I'm still annoyed with it. You can almost time this slump back to his days off, his two in a row days off. The 25th was the Tuesday, his first game back. He had, what, one or two hits? nothing since. So it annoys me that Cora rests these guys. I think it can screw with their rhythm a little bit. And Xander wasn't having ugly at-bats like you'll see with Dahlbeck swinging at stuff in the dirt 2 feet in front of him. I don't think it's a long-term thing either, but getting into my dud, because it kind of ties into it. And I'll get back to Xander and JD and Devers in a second with it, but Kike Hernandez, he was a dud in the last show. I think Emma Houghton picked him as her dud. He had a bad series, and then this series he comes in, he's 0 for 11. Strikeout in all three games. And it frustrates it's not his fault that the Red Sox have him as the leadoff guy. It's not his fault that he's the best option. What is his fault is his fundamentally wrong mindset and how he approaches his role in that position. He's always swinging for the fences. He's trying to be a power guy when all we need the leadoff guy to do is put the ball in play. Put the ball in play. That's it. Just hit for contact. And not only we needed him to be better than his career numbers, and he's worse. He's worse than his career numbers are. And everybody's pointing it out right now. Eck and O'Brien on the Nesson broadcast, as the game started, they were pointing out how he had today off. And they're like, yeah, it's just not working out. He's just not working out in the leadoff spot. And Cora said yesterday at the end of the game that he's got no other options. There's nothing he can do. He doesn't want to mess with Verdugo, Martinez, Bogarts, and Devers. He likes 2 through 5 just like that. So what are the options? We've seen Santana do it. We've seen Gonzalez in that spot. And Hernandez needs to change his approach. He's not gonna thrive in that role in his current mindset. And I'm so tired of it.
Yeah, I mean, I like Hernandez as a player. I think he's putting way too much pressure on himself. I didn't want him in the leadoff spot to begin with. I thought he was a great 7-hole hitter. But if Arroyo gets healthy and starts hitting, I think there's your swap right there. Because I do trust Kike to put the bat on the ball if he needs to put the bat on the ball. And if he has to move a guy around, you know, up a base, or if there's less than 2 outs and a guy on third, knock him in with a medium depth fly ball to right center. I trust him to do that. I would like to see that change happen. I wish we weren't so, you know, locked in on having Verdugo in the 2-hole, because I love Verdugo as a leadoff hitter. But I think, you know, one more month or 2 to 3 weeks, I do think Jaron Duran might be taking that position and hopefully running with it for the rest of the year, kind of like a Jacoby Ellsbury in, what was that, 2013?
You think he'll go right into the 1-hole?
I kind of think he's going to force a spot. I do. I really do.
Okay.
I hope Andrew's right.
Been getting praised in the Olympic trials right now. Even Todd Frazier came out the other day. He's like, hey, man, I called Mike Trout back in the day. I told you he was going to be great. I'm telling you right now, this Jaron Duran guy is going to be awesome. So I don't know. In Todd, we trust.
I wonder if Cora knows that Duran is weeks away from making contributions to the big club, and that's why he hasn't tinkered with the top spot all that often. Because we haven't seen Kike Hernandez hit anywhere else in the order. We've seen him get days off and other guys, you know, hit leadoff. But when he's playing, he's hitting in the leadoff spot. And I understand it. We talked about it, you know, in the preseason even. where do you hit Kike? And it was like, well, I guess he's the only traditional lineup hitter you have for the leadoff spot. If Verdugo doesn't want it, Verdugo does not want it. He said it multiple times. He's not comfortable there. And if Cora won't mess with it, I wonder if he knows, you know, that Duran is coming. But assuming he doesn't, and assuming he has to make a change with the guys you have on the roster, I mean, I think the only other option is Christian Arroyo. I look at it and say there's no other guy who I think has the approach to take a lot of pitches and put the ball in play. Christian Arroyo would probably be my next man up in that spot. And he hasn't been healthy enough to where you could throw him in the leadoff spot every day and, you know, give him that opportunity. So I wonder if maybe that's the change we see first. And Duran, you know, maybe slides into the eight hole where Dalbec is currently, you know, hitting comfortably. And then we see a shuffle up in maybe August, give him some time to get acclimated to big league pitching. But I don't know. I just think Kike is pressing. His career numbers are about 240. And then, if I'm not mistaken, 299 or 300 on base. And he's slugging about the same as his career numbers. So he's pressing a little bit to try to be an impact guy, which is unlike him. When he was never asked to be an impact guy with the Dodgers until the playoffs, where we obviously know he's got cojones, right? He goes out there and makes the big play. But on an everyday basis, he's just not a leadoff hitter. And it's not his fault. And it's not Cora's fault either. This team just doesn't have the option for anybody to hit leadoff. And the main reason is I think some of the guys that they would want to put up there just haven't been good. Like a Marwin Gonzalez got a chance up there for a couple of days when Kike was hurt. He's been horrendous with the bat, things like that. There's just no other options. So
in screwed. In Kike's defense, he's actually been really good to lead off the game. It's after that he's been terrible. Before the series, Sox Stats had it the other day. He was in 314 on the season as the leadoff first batter of the game. I don't know what's happening after that, but that's kind of when we need it the most is after that, because there always seems to be a guy on or, you know.
Well, I kind of feel like that's what it is, Andrew, is the first hitter of the game. He seems to be loose no matter what's going on. And we see him get hits in games where we're up by four runs and he comes up in a big spot. But in the tight games, the close games, when we need him to get on in front of the big bats, he's pressing and he's either popping up or he's striking out. So to me, it's not his fault. It's just that he's being asked to do something that he's not built to do from an approach standpoint, and it's really messing with his game.
Well, we need a guy who can get on base in front of Alex Verdugo and JD Martinez. So whether it's the first at bat or the second, third, or fourth, I mean, he's just not getting it done. And he's either striking out or he's flying out. He's got two extra base hits in the entire month of May. That's all he had.
That's misleading, though, Terry. I mean, you look at his hits. I mean, his outs, rather. He's making some loud outs. A lot of his fly balls are deep center, deep right.
But that's
going right at somebody. So I don't necessarily hate that part of his game. I hate the strikeouts and the fact that he's pushing himself to do too much.
That's fine in the seven hole. I don't like it in the leadoff spot. I just want him on base.
To, Terry? Who do you go to?
You mentioned Arroyo, and that would be fine. He's started four or five games in the leadoff spot already, and it was kind of mixed, but he got hit in the hand and missed 2-3 weeks. So we haven't really gotten to see what he can do over a large sample size, but he will put together good at bats. This is a team this is a lineup that's just not fundamentally sound right now. And it's in the leadoff spot. It's Bobby Dalbec, who's in another painful slump, 0-for, I think, 21, something like that. He had an 0-for 25 slump prior to this. So we're going to get into this on Deep Dives, which is the next episode. It'll be out 24 hours after this one. But I'm just so done with Kike, and you see it on social media. Everybody's done. The Nesson crew is done with him. The Red Sox can't hide him. They can't. He's just a glaring weakness in this lineup. As
his big league career with the Red Sox is done, in my opinion.
Oh, I was talking about Kike.
Ready this year, but supposedly, but there's just no role for Dahlbeck going forward with this organization, and maybe a change of scenery will do him good. You know, I don't know. Andrew's the guy who knows the farm more so than I do, but I just, with Casas coming up and the praise we've seen for him, I don't know if it's a spot for Dahlbeck long term.
You know, he's struggling, and they can't continue with this if it's going to be like this. But he's quietly turning into one of the best defensive first basemen in the league, which I don't think anyone saw coming. So if he's your late inning defensive replacement, if you can carry him like that, like we've seen Sox teams in the past, carry, what was it, Dave McCarthy, Doug Minkiewicz.
Sure.
Yeah, guys are like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. When other position, I was just thinking first, but he can provide value in, you know, in that aspect. We saw an amazing diving play to keep that game what it was today. Because was a guy in first and second, that would have been second or bases loaded after that. Who knows how that game would have ended up?
I mean, they might have waved the guy home. Who knows?
Yeah,
I agree with you, Andrew, that there's some value for him. I just,
oh,
big of a black hole.
No. I agree. I actually sent a tweet. I was sending it right as he made that play, and it pissed me off, so I didn't send it. So then I sent it 10 minutes later. I think a guy like CJ Krohn out here in Denver could be someone that the Red Sox could target on a $1 million one-year deal. I don't even think it was a major league deal when he first signed it. Just something cheap. Cheap money, no years attached. I think that's going to be their move because there's no first baseman in the minors. I don't think they're going to mess with Tristan. I think they're going to let him play, especially after losing all of last year. They're going to let him develop. Don't want to start the clock on him. And Chavis has not hit since returning to the minors. He's been really, really terrible, especially in that bandbox that is Worcester.
Well,
so
I think
they're going to look outside the organization.
I think you kind of have to. And the reason I say that, I think that Chavis is now done in Boston as well. And I don't know if he has another role somewhere else. But the fact that he's been bouncing back and forth, and it just seems his confidence is just gone. He's got no confidence in himself to make a stick, you know, a lasting impact with the big club. So we'll get into it, I'm sure, at some point in a deep dives episode. But I just, there's an absolute glaring hole at first base as far as offense is concerned. And it makes me miss Mitch Moreland that much more.
Jonathan Araúz isn't spectacular right now in Worcester, but he would have to be a better option at first base than Dahlbeck. So, don't have a ton of time here for dishonorables. Eduardo Rodriguez, not great. 4 2/3, 7 hits, 6 earned runs. Walked 2, only struck out 4. We'll get into him. We can kind of get into him a little bit here in a minute because we got to get into the series preview for the Yankees, and he goes game 2. Let's go with game 1. Red Sox go to New York. This is the first series against the Yankees this year. So as ugly as the Houston series was, we ended it on a good note. We're starting in game 1 with a pitcher who is on a pretty good run. Nathan Eovaldi came off of a 5 1/3 inning scoreless outing. His start before that, also 5 1/3, only gave up 2 runs. So Evaldi's hot, and this is a team he has typically had a lot of success with. And he's going up against Michael King, who is typically a reliever. Maybe he's going to be utilized as an opener. I don't know what their intention here is, but this should be a pretty good matchup for the Red Sox in game 1.
You hope so, but Eovaldi has had some really bad outings in the Bronx. But I don't know. I was torn this whole week on who I wanted to win between the Yankees and Rays. And I kind of, you know, I was happy the Yankees took two at one point, but I was glad they lost today and in a, you know, kind of a beatdown fashion, because I think that gets them a little more down. They, you know, you're catching them at a bad time, but Evaldi's got to exercise some demons here.
Yeah, I was kind of with you there, Andrew. I wanted them to, the Yankees, to either win today or make it at least a closer game today, though, because I wanted them to burn some bullpen arms. And unfortunately, even with Gerrit Cole not having a good day, they still didn't have to put in Chapman. They didn't have to use some of those big high-leverage arms in the bullpen. So those guys should be fresh coming in here, which scares me a little bit, because the Yankees can always shorten games with that bullpen. But I think this is going to be a close series. This game in particular, I want to say we're going to win it, but I don't know whether King is going to be the starter or not. Like you said, Terry, if he's an opener and they bring in somebody else to go five innings, that scares me a little bit more than Michael King. So I'm going to say the Red Sox win game one.
Well, I think it would be Chad Green to come in and try.
Oh, in that case, in that case, I'm taking the Red Sox by a landslide.
Yeah, there's just something about Evaldi, and he's only given up one home run on the year, so that might keep Judge and Stanton kind of at bay. And I think Nathan Evaldi loves the big game. He loves it. You know, we've seen it in the playoffs. We've seen it against the Yankees in the past. I'm really not too worried about him. Hopefully the Red Sox bats have some success here. So I'll go for a win in game one. Game two, though. Arguably both teams' worst starters going head to head. Eduardo Rodriguez versus Jameson Taillon. Taillon hasn't, he's gone five innings or less in his last four starts and given up three plus runs in three out of his last four. So he's been getting tagged. I didn't think that would be a very good acquisition for the Yankees. They probably should have went with Musgrove if they were going to be shopping in Pittsburgh. But they do have the benefit of hitting Rodriguez. So, Andrew, how do you see this game going?
That one I'm giving to the Yankees. Erod's not doing well, and Taillon had a bad outing last. I don't know. It just seems like one of those guys that gives the Red Sox trouble. He just has that build, that makeup, and that stuff that the Red Sox tend to scuffle with. So if they're going to drop a game, I think that this is probably the most likely.
Well, I've said it three straight shows, and I've been wrong three straight shows. I think Eduardo Rodriguez is going to put it all together here. the reason I take the Red Sox in game two isn't so much that I have faith in the Sox in this game. It's, one, I have a strong dislike of Taillon. I don't think he's a great pitcher. In fact, I think they're lucky that his ERA is where it is. It could have been a lot higher. If you don't take him out that early, he's been getting shelled by some teams. But it's mostly because I think the Yankees are looking ahead to their off day on Monday and getting the hell out of this slump that they're in. You know, they're looking back at a string of 12 games in 11 days. They're 3-7 in their last 10. And they have an off day immediately after this series. I think they're looking forward to just getting the hell out of the limelight for a second and putting themselves back together. So I just don't think that they'll bring their best in this series. I think we win game two.
Job's picking a game two win. Normally, if Erod's right, Yankee Stadium's one of his better places to pitch, believe it or not. He's got a 3.96 ERA there. And I think that went up in one of his last couple appearances there. It was lower. So Erod typically also has been a big game pitcher in the past, but this is a guy who just can't quite figure it out. And he's getting slapped a little bit every time. He hasn't been wild at all, but he's over the plate and very hittable. So I'm
going to be honest, Terry. I don't think he's going to go that deep into the game. I think this is going to be a Whitlock game, if I'm honest. And I'd love to see Erod for four, Whitlock for three, and then bring in the bullpen arms to shut him down. Because if Whitlock can shut up Yankee Stadium, nothing will make me happier than that. And nothing will bring the Red Sox Typhoon fanboy to the fore more than that.
So. Well, you got to have Ottavino close it out. That's the other part of it.
I want him to do it only if there's a several run lead, though. I don't want any hanky panky. The problem with the Whitlock theory, I'd love it if it played out that way, but he doesn't get brought in with many leads lately. So, or he gets brought in, you know, when it's a blowout. So, not many super high leverage appearances the last few times out. And against the Astros, he went 1 2/3, but allowed 5 base runners. So, wasn't the sharpest of his outings, but he didn't give up a run nonetheless. So he could be working through some things as well. But I'm going lost there in game two until Erod proves me wrong. And I hope he does. Game three, arguably two of the better pitchers on each staff. Garrett Richards will go against Domingo Germán, who I don't think has given up more than 3 runs in any outing. And so this could be a low-scoring game. It could be a bit of a duel compared to some of the other games in the series. Definitely the most even matchup. Andrew, how do you see this one going?
The Red Sox are a family team. They love their wives. They are going to beat the crap out of Germán. And I also say this because I love Garrett Richards. So Garrett Richards, let's do it, baby. I don't know. I think Herman's a guy that they could hit, knock around. Oh God, that's terrible phrasing right there. That they could
score
do some damage against. Yeah, exactly. There it is. I really do think they can get to him. I'm not overly worried about Germán. I think he's kind of volatile on a game-to-game basis. So. Yeah, this one, he's doing better than I thought, but I think they can absolutely hand it to him this game.
Joe?
Well, I'm looking at Herman's numbers because Andrew's absolutely right. What he does game to game is so different. He has been good of late, 3-1 in his last 7 starts, 2.37 ERA, 42 innings pitched, only 28 hits, 7 walks, and 39 strikeouts. So whatever kind of pine tar he's using or whatever rosin he's using, it's the same one as Garrett Cole, and it's working. I don't like this matchup for the Sox, but I want to like it so much because I want them to score 10 runs on this guy and really put the Yankees away. If we could sweep the Yankees here, they could go down to about 5.5, 6.5, almost 7 games out if the Rays keep winning. And that would be huge for us down the stretch. So I really want to put him away here, but I think we probably drop game 3.
Here's what I want to happen. I want there to be drama in game 1 or 2. I want the benches to clear. I don't care how drastic it is. But I want all eyes on this game on ESPN on Sunday night. And I want it to be the highest pressure possible situation for Richards, because that's the last box he needs to check off as far as I'm concerned, besides the durability thing. But this is it. So it's in Yankee Stadium. It's one of, I said Houston would be the most hostile environment he pitched in, on the last show coming into that series. This one will be similar. And Richards has a 2.70 ERA in his last 7 starts, so he's been solid, as we've seen. He's a tightrope specialist, so hopefully he continues to get out of jams. And this Yankees team has had problems scoring runs, and maybe he can keep them at bay. I think this will probably be a low scoring game. So I'm going to take the Red Sox to win it. So I have the Red Sox winning the series 2-1.
I'm calling for a sweep. Actually, I changed my mind. I'm calling for a sweep.
I think they take three. I really, really? Do. It's, okay. Or, sorry, two. I think they take two.
Okay.
The three would be a sweep. Yeah, I think they take two. I just think they're better than this Yankees team, who have not much confidence going into this series because we've seen terrible base running. The only way the Yankees are going to take more than one is if Gary Sanchez has like the series of his life, which seems to happen on occasion against this Red Sox team.
Well, we'll see. All three of us have the Red Sox winning the series. The bad news is all three of us on the last show had us winning the Astros series. So hopefully it holds up here in New York. First series of the year. Deep dives we'll have tomorrow, 24 hours after this one, and then we will be back on Sunday night to discuss what the hell did happen in New York. Talk to you then. Take care.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.